to my the advice given, I'm going to ask if anyone has any last comments or questions about the book of 1 John. We were right at the end of it, and had the concepts pretty much down and discussed. But if anybody wanted to finish up a comment or a thought or a question about 1 John, the last couple of verses, this is the time. Okay. No questions, comments, emotional speeches, anything like that. All right. 2 John. A while back, Jonathan did the introduction for this whole study of 1st, 2nd, 3rd John. So I'm going to recount just a little bit of that, make sure we're still where we need to be thought-wise on that. From the introduction by Jonathan, we assume that the Apostle John wrote 1st, 2nd, 3rd John as well as the Gospel of John, that he wrote all four of those above documents. We're also assuming that the date of the writing of the Gospel of John as well as 1st, 2nd, 3rd John is somewhere in the 90s A.D., give or take. And that would put the discussion about the Gnostics in a time context that's appropriate, as well as later on in John's life. Comments on any of that? Anybody have any second thoughts about that as we now have revisited it? Okay. And so, as John writes these epistles, as we call them, a long one, 1 John, fairly long, and then a short one in 2 and 3 John. These two are personal letters, that it would appear. As the 1 John is more of a broad treatise that would be passed around the congregation. Not saying these might not as well, but that was the purpose of that of the 1 John. And then 2 John, we'll talk about who it's written to. We may get through that very quickly. We may spend a week on it. I'm not sure. We'll see how that goes. Who was it written to? But hold that thought. And in the first century, the early church enjoyed remarkable growth, as we know from the book of Acts and the other epistles. There were likely several contributing factors, but one was a propensity of believers in various parts of the known world at that time to host preachers and assist them and send money to them and help them in any way they could, which was a good thing and helped the growth of the church and the spread of the gospel, saving of souls, all that. But showing such enthusiasm for spreading the gospel was not without a potential for supporting false teachers. And so as John is now reiterating and he is emphasizing more on this Gnosticism thing, it appears to me, at least, maybe you can straighten me out if I'm wrong, that he's focusing in on either a congregation or some people that may have unwittingly helped out the false teachers. That's me. That's my backstory that I've kind of settled on. And so, as he writes to the elect lady and her children, whomever, whatever that is. He's emphasizing about these false teachers and about the doctrine of Christ and those kind of things. And he's zeroing in a short, somewhat personal, direct letter here to a specific situation at a specific place, is my understanding. And so, from that thought process and that backstory, let's look a little further. It was necessary to counsel Christians, as what appears John is doing here, to use proper discernment in inviting and traveling teachers and preachers into their midst and supporting them on their travels. My backstory is that they probably unwittingly allowed some of these Gnostic teachers to come in and gave them the pulpit, as it were, maybe not a pulpit like we have, but gave them the ear of the family or the congregation, depending on what we decide a little later. And the second epistle of John, consisting of just one chapter, addresses this very problem, it appears to me, is watch out for false teachers. And it seems like he's kind of pointing that you may have unwittingly aided a false teacher or more. Comments on that? We'll look. Yes. Yep. Same thing. Well, we know that in Acts, Judaizing teachers were following Paul around, right? And so as they would go from congregation to congregation or household to household, maybe in a wide geographical area, they were changing stuff that Paul had told them. And Paul was sometimes, you know, the Galatians, I'm shocked that you're so soon removed from the gospel. And not another gospel, but all these false teachings. And so it happened, and it happens then, it happens today. And as we, who is the first line of defense then for a false teacher from Pax's scenario of associating themselves with a congregation like Dale and I did, and start spreading, you know, some minor differences, and then medium-sized differences, and then big deal. Who's the first line of defense for that? Well, okay. It's you. If you hear something that smacks differently than what you've been taught through the Scriptures and from the elders and from other class teachers, now it doesn't mean that the person is wrong yet, does it? But it means that it's, wait a minute, that sounds a little different. We ought to talk about that and maybe get some more folks involved to make sure that all we want to do is live correctly by the doctrine, the faith, and go to heaven. And so if we're wrong about something, we need to change. And if I am and if you are, you need to change. Let's get it right and then live it. And so you are the first line of defense when you hear something that doesn't mesh with what you've been you studied yourself and or been taught in sermons or classes, that kind of thing. And so as congregations of the Lord's church, I mean, you know, we can't point the finger too badly at other organizations, religious organizations, because the Lord's church has had a long history of going off the rails, as it were, and having to sever part of it from the body to keep the doctrine straight. And you could go down through the last 150 years or 200 years or 150 years or so, probably, and you could count the times where there's been schisms in the church over doctrine. And somebody had to stand up and say, that's not right, and then have a Bible study, or I disagree with you at least, and let's have a Bible study and figure out what it is. And many times there was no consensus reached, and people went their own way in the Lord's church. And so we can't really point too many fingers at denominations far and wide that do that kind of thing. The Presbyterians now are worried about how liberal they've become. Well, I think it's too little, too late. But nevertheless, there are some people who are saying we can't handle this gender thing. We're not going to agree with that. I don't know how it's all going to turn out, but But even a group has went way off the rails like the Presbyterians, at some point people are saying, that's just not right. Something's not right here. And so the first line of defense is the one who hears it and studies with someone or has a discussion with someone about doctrine that it doesn't sound right, doesn't fit with what you've studied and been taught. That's not to say somebody up here like me won't make mistakes, right? And you're doing me a favor if you say, I don't think that was right. Let's talk about that. That's happened to me over the course of my life a number of times. More seasoned Christians talking to me about things that I might have said or preached. And so we have to be the first line of defense. Dale can't be everywhere. Doug can't be everywhere. And no elder can be everywhere. And so as you sit and talk with someone or someone starts a conversation with you about things that doctrinal issues, then listen and figure out if it's in accordance with the word or not. And if you need help, then get help. Comments on that? So we have to be our own first line of defense. What does that imply about us then that we need to be? There you go. If you don't know the word, everything might sound reasonable, or things that are not scriptural might sound reasonable. I think that may be what happened here at this either family or congregation. If you don't understand and be able to, if you haven't grown in the faith and studied yourself and become able to handle the meat of the word instead of just needing the milk all the time. You know, I have two little grandchildren. One is just turned 10 months old, and the other is 2.5 years old. Well, the 2.5 year old one, he hadn't taken a bottle in a long time. He likes food and a fair amount of it. And so at some point you need to progress past the milk of the word and get into the meat of the word. And there's an old saying that I've repeated. I'm not sure even where it came from. But some people will say, well, I've been a Christian for 25 years. Okay. Does that mean you've got 25 years of study and growth? Or does that mean you've got 1 year study and growth 25 times? Which is it? Self-examination. We need to look. Have we progressed in the word so that when we hear something that doesn't sound right, we can go to here and reason with the scriptures, not with I think so or I think Dale said that or Doug said, I'm not sure, and I don't understand it anyway. That's not the place that we need to be. Comments? Creeping in.
Then he says, but they're always learning and never able to come to the full knowledge of the truth. And he's actually talking about the gullible people.
Yeah. Yep.
But the false teacher preys on those people that are always learning and never come to the knowledge.
That's right. And so you, as someone who hasn't progressed over the last number of years, whatever number that is for you, are easy prey. Pick you off one at a time. And you may have seen that if you've been around different congregations over your lifetime where people get drawn away and something sounds good and they're emotionally invested in a person because they're friends with them now, and it's hard to break that when you sit down with them and say that's not scriptural, that's not what the Bible teaches, and that kind of thing. Okay, thank you. Anything else? Okay. Somebody's got to keep track of. Okay.
You mentioned these other denominations a minute ago. False teaching doesn't necessarily have to come in here. We may keep it completely filtered out in our
yep.
home congregation. So we're not protected just because we come here. You made the point that Dale and Doug can't be everywhere. interest that their religious body or whatever is doing at the time. And we like it, and we continue to, you know, we appraise it as, oh, well, it's a good work, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
We may say, or we may nod our heads that we agree with what's taught here, but if we're doing something different out there, then we're letting that come into our hearts.
Yeah.
And we're letting it change our prism, which we look through in the things that we're doing.
That's a great point. Yes, sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
They were so comfortable saying that. Mm-hmm. They didn't have any kind of ownership of, I need to know that as a believer.
Right.
You just roll off the tongue. Well, I've heard that mindset more and more as a member of the church,
mm-hmm.
where I don't know the answer. I've been a Christian for 25 years. If it doesn't bother me, I don't know the answer. I'll ask my elder.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we are becoming what we used to study with and be concerned about. Now we have the mindset of, well, I don't need to know that. As long as Doug knows the answer, I'm good, because he would tell me otherwise. You know, you can't evangelize without knowing
that's
the
right.
word to share with others. And we're comfortable doing the very thing that we shook our head at years ago, saying, how can they sleep at night knowing that they don't have an answer for how to be saved or how to worship or anything? And they were fine with that. Clear conscience.
There's,
we have that mindset.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a generation growing up in the church that doesn't. Let me make sure I say this correctly. There's a generation growing up in the church that doesn't think their friends who attend denominations are doing anything wrong. They think they're Christians, and if you say they're not members of the Lord's body. You have blown them away, and then you're one of those people, but they're not. And if you say that they are, we're talking about denominations now, then you have fallen into false doctrine, and you have let your emotions rule your logic rather than the other way around. And so And just the way that you said and the PAC said is that you're on Facebook and they did something at their denominational church and you like it and you say that's a great work or you want to encourage them or whatever. It does you no good and does them no good, because the truth of the matter is they need the gospel pure and simple, and they need Jesus, and they don't have either. And people, young people today, don't want to talk about that. Is that if you're a member of the Lord's body, then the scriptures are your book, and your where the commandments are, and where the doctrine is, where the faith is, and you need to be able to understand that, and then talk to your friends, because if you support them in their denomination, you're supporting them going to hell, pure and simple. And that's a tough concept for the younger generation now, because they sometimes think that the church is more of a social club than it is a serious effort to get to heaven. Yes, sir. Yeah.
You don't see it in Scripture. Jesus was not afraid of offending. And many times he did, his apostles asked him, said, no, you really hurt their feelings. And his answer was never one of apology. It was, the truth is going to hurt. It's going to be a double-edged sword. And we have to have the same mindset. But now the mindset of the church is, the worst thing we can do is hurt somebody's feelings or step on their toes. And that is not a scriptural mindset.
Yeah. And we don't have to be intentionally mean about it, but just talking about the true gospel hurts their feelings many times, because that's not what they believe. It's not what their parents believed. Maybe not what their grandparents believed. I've been through that with folks about, well, you're saying my grandfather is not going to heaven. Well, it's not up for me to decide. God can do whatever he wants to. I'm fine with that. But as I read the scriptures, this is what you have to do. So I'm talking to you, and this is what you have to do. And he said, I would never go any church, any place that said my grandfather's not going to heaven because he didn't do what you say. It's not me, it's what the Bible says. And some people can't get over that hump of you have to do what's best for you and your family. And if other members of your family didn't obey the gospel, I have family members that didn't obey the gospel. And it makes me sad, but it's nonetheless a fact that they didn't. And so they will pay for that. I have to worry about myself and my family and those kind of things, right? Yes.
Mm-hmm. If you say something against someone else's thought process,
yep.
You are considered aggressive,
yeah,
and argumentative.
Yeah. And no one wants to sit down and study because because an open study you're going to have some things that are not comfortable. And that's true. Paul didn't have the best etiquette about hurting people's feelings, did he? And so as we think about that, going to on further in here, let's make sure that we are thinking about where we are, where I am. I'm not going to be evaluating you. You're going to be evaluating you. Because I really can't, you know, unless you come to me or the elders or whatever, I really can't evaluate you. You know, we could sit and talk about things and so forth if you wanted to. But I think most of us in this room, at least, know if you're honest with yourself, know where you stand and what you need to do and where you need to be putting your effort. Yes. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to change your mind.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It's like, I mean, they'll tell you, I know what the Bible says.
But I've been there. My parents were there. My grandparents were there. All my friends were there. It's a social, it's the social, emotional connection that keeps them.
I was at a funeral yesterday with a pastor in the memorial service. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It said in there, it said you'd be saved.
Yeah.
Nothing in there but that.
That's right.
It's just like they read one part of it and they don't read the rest of it.
And this omitting pertinent things out of the scriptures is as bad as making stuff up and putting in, because you can't take away and you can't add to. She didn't want to utter it, right? Our evangelist in Georgia, he had a Bible study, and he invited whoever wanted to come. They had a restaurant or something on a certain morning. And there were several Baptist folks that came. And he started talking about baptism for the remission of sins and Lord's Supper and those kind of things. And he thought he was going to convert one or two of them. But what they did is they just started taking the Lord's Supper at home before they went to the Baptist church. And so, it's hard. And nowhere does it say this is going to be easy, right? Good comments. A rich class, thank you. The book, or the letter, is addressed to the elect lady and her children. I think there's probably, we can settle on two possibilities as what the term means. It could be an actual woman who is a Christian and her actual children. It's a personal letter. It's very direct and very to the point. Or it could be, and that's why that a lot of people think it's an actual person that he's writing to. Another one is it could not be a local church and its members being the children. And that also kind of fits, especially if some of the wording in Revelation. And some people say, well, this is a church universal. I'm thinking it's mostly just either a woman and her children, a Christian lady and her children, or a local church and its members. One of those two. Any thoughts on which one it is? Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So you think it's a congregation, and the children are the members of the local congregation. Yeah, sure. Because it is people. Does it make a difference in the teaching? No. And so as you're thinking about, you know, self-examination and those kind of things we talked about before, and you come across things in the Scriptures, there are some things that we can agree to disagree on, this being one. I don't know if it's to a real Christian lady and her children, or if it's to the local congregation and the members being described as children. It's okay either way, whatever you think about that, because we're going to get to the real issue of truth and love and those kind of things and doctrine. Those are the important things. Whether it's a person or a congregation, I think we can agree to disagree on that if you want to. Comments on that. Is that okay? So there are things that we don't have to drive a stake in the ground. There are a few things that we don't have to, but there are many, many things that that are clear cut that we have to that are in the doctrine of Christ. We have to abide by those. Right? The actual Greek words, I'm not going to bore you with that one. Some identify the words as the designation of the universal church. Ephesians 5:25, husbands, love your wives just as Christ so loved the church. Ephesians 5:32, this mystery is great, but I'm speaking with reference to Christ and the church. And so, same wording there, same Greek words. Some identify these two words as the designation of a local congregation, the Southside Church. The elect lady and her children mentioned in verse 1:1 may refer to a local church and its members, as we've just talked about. Note that in verse 5, there is a reference to a person, a lady, but in verse 8, the plural form is used to look into yourselves. And so verse 5 says, and now I ask you, lady, not as writing to you a new commandment, but one which we have had from the beginning, that we love one another. And then in verse 8, watch yourselves, that you might lose what we have accomplished. And so it is it's an either or in my mind. So, most plausible explanation in my mind is probably that it was a Christian lady that was loved by all. Her children with whom John had contact were obedient. Her home may have housed a local congregation. She is well known for hospitality, especially towards preachers. But if it's a congregation, then everyone loved each other. And the members, her children, were obedient. And they had a congregation, maybe in somebody's home, but they had a local congregation that the members were all part of. And they were well known for their hospitality, especially toward preachers. Either way, it works, right? And so we look at the attributes. They're loved by all. They were obedient. They were a local congregation. They had known for hospitality toward preachers. And now you have this Gnosticism coming in and somehow sneaking through the front door, as it were, maybe with an innocent invitation or something like that, and teaching these false doctrines. So the apostles' second and third letters are so similar in thought, as we'll see when 3 John, that they're often considered together, and obviously they're much shorter. They're very direct and to the point, and they don't wander, and it cuts them off pretty quick. Both are personal letters, either to individual saints or congregations. Well, it can have it either way, but not I don't think necessarily to the brethren at large, as 1 John was. Introduction to a specific person, unless you favor the local or universal congregation. Commandments for faithfulness. Warnings about false teachers. Closing thoughts about a personal visit from the apostle. And those kind of things. Both of them do that. They're very similar. John gives emphasis to a certain doctrinal themes in 2 and 3 John. Truth is used 5 times in 2 John and 6 times in 3 John. It doesn't sound like a lot till you know that you're dealing with 13 verses and 14 verses. So not quite half of them have one or the other of those. Love, or its derivatives, is one of his favorite themes in 1 John, and is again 4 times in 2 John and 6 times in 3 John in those small number of verses. Walking I put in there example walking in truth, also repeated in these epistles 3 times in 2 John and 2 times in 3 John. What is, in this context and in a broader context, what does walking mean? To do for what purpose? Yeah, and so being and doing Christian, being and doing abiding in Christ, having God, 2 John 9, being obedient, being loving, being faithful, all those words is what walking is. And just like if you're starting off walking and you're going to build up your endurance, and oh, it takes time to do that. It takes work. You have to be diligent about it. You have to do it a regular basis. So you build up your legs and muscles and your breath and your lungs and you can walk a quarter of a mile. Then you know, before you know it, if you're really diligent, you can walk a mile and 2 miles and those kind of things. All right, we all know about building our bodies up physically to do more. We have to build our hearts and minds up spiritually to do more. We have to get our spiritual endurance, get our base knowledge up from this to up to here, whatever that is for you. And we have to then exercise it, use it. So our figuratively muscles of spiritual muscles can take us further. And our spiritual lungs can keep us going, and we don't tire, and we don't give out, and we don't sit down and not do it anymore because it hurts, because we have to do a lot of study. Yeah. Comments? Yes, sir.
Good and bad is that you're either in or out of a relationship with Christ. And so
the light and the dark thing. You're walking in light or you're walking in dark. There's no gray. There's no gray area. Perfect. John, 2 John is a personal letter dealing with false doctrine from Gnosticism. Confirm the faith of the recipients, to confirm that in their minds, to exhort them to walk in love. What, there's that walk again, is to walk in love, to warn them again and again of false teachers. And that seems to be their weak point. The book was written because it is an exhortation towards continuance in truth. Verse 4 through 6 deal with a practical aspect of walking in love. Verses 7 through 11 deal with a doctrinal aspect of watch against error. So there's this twofold thing we have to do. Walking in love, we have to do all that, but we have to be on guard. You know, the suit of armor, so to speak, the armor of God, is a lot of it's defensive. And we have to be able to defend ourselves from the wiles of the devil, from false teachers. Admonish the elect lady, whoever she was, a person or a little congregation or the entire church universe, admonish her for what? To be faithful to sound doctrine and walk in obedience. Not to be carried away by winds of doctrine. And to warn her a secondfold is against false teachers and their evil doctrines. Not be led away by teachers that preach a different doctrine. And it's good that we study it because this happens today. It can happen to any of us. An examination of the text of 2 John shows that it is written to express joy that we may be walking in the truth. That we walk in love. Warn that false teachers have to be withstood and avoided. Withstood to the face. If you remember, even among the apostles, when one of them went astray, they were withstood to the face. You get in somebody's face today and then, you know, you'll have to get arrested. But he withstood them to the face. Paul's withstood Peter to the face. Because he was to be blamed. He did evil. And so as we think about this, false teachers have to be withstood, whether they're in the congregation or without of the congregation. Affirm that truth is limited to the doctrine of Christ, verse 9, and may not be go beyond it. And so you can tell what's outside the doctrine of Christ is you got to know the doctrine of Christ. I'll probably beat that horse to death. Adherence to truth meant rejecting fellowship with false teachers. Don't give them Godspeed. Don't associate with them. John's hope to see them face to face and salutation from other Christians. All right. So we're going to start with verse 1. We've done the overview, and a lot of this stuff we will theoretically move through fairly quickly, but we're out of time. Thank you.